I knew I was in trouble when Nico Sanchez appeared in the door of my office and said, "You gotta see this new body, Hannigan." It's never a good way to start a conversation. I looked up from my paperwork to see the officer hovering in my doorway. Sanchez had kind of a blanched look on his face, although that didn't mean much. The guy had never had much of a stomach when it came to dead bodies. Probably not a great quality for a cop to have, but hey, nobody's perfect. I was the one people usually came to with weird shit, and if Sanchez wanted me to come look at a corpse, there must have been something funky about it. Joy upon joys. Still, the alternative was sitting here going through autopsy reports, so any kind of distraction was good in my book. I got up and followed him down the hall to the mortuary. "Who's the Vic?" I asked. "Name's Harvey Jackson. Found dead in his apartment this morning. The coroner doesn't think there's any foul play involved, but they're keeping him on ice in case the autopsy reveals drugs in his system or something." "Oh, I'll take you suspect differently," I said. "Or we wouldn't be talking right now." "I don't know what to think, honestly," Sanchez replied. "But I think you ought to have a look." We reached the mortuary door and strode inside. Harvey Jackson was laid out on the examiner's table, pale and scrawny and buck naked. His eyes were closed, and I was struck, as usual, how much the dead looked like they were just sleeping. The ones who died peacefully, anyway. At a certain point, a body can only get so mangled before the illusion of sleep goes out the window. Sanchez approached the cadaver with some hesitance. The pale operating lights didn't do either of them any favors. Jackson had the complexion of a stained white blanket, and the officer looked positively sickly. You could tell Sanchez had been fit at some point, but the years had given him a bit of a gut, and his once chiseled jaw was rounded by baby fat. He scratched at his stubble and stared down at the body.
"So gross," he said. "You seeing this, Hannigan?"
I stepped around the table to get a closer look. The body itself was in decent condition, for a corpse at least, but its left ear was splattered with a viscous gray substance that looked like chunky glue. As I watched, a stream of the stuff blurbled out of the ear and dripped onto the table. I stepped back before any of it could splash onto my uniform.
"Is it supposed to be doing that?" Sanchez asked.
"The body's been in the cold chamber since this morning, right?" I said. "Any excess bodily fluids should have dripped out by now. This stuff is fresh." I looked up at Sanchez. "How did our victim die again?"
"Aneurysm, supposedly. The coroner seemed kind of distracted when I was asking him about it. I guess he's never seen anything like this either."
I glanced down at the puddle of gray goo. It had stopped bubbling, but the surface was still wet and slick. Something inside this guy's skull was leaking, and I was pretty sure I knew what it was. I looked over at the medical tray, picked up the bone saw, and gave the button an experimental press. It whirred to life with a soft mechanical whine. "Get the coroner," I told Sanchez. "I think we'd better crack open this melon." Jackson's eyes snapped open, wide and blood red, and a hand shot out to seize my wrist. The bone saw clattered to the floor, scraping noisily against the tiles. I cried out as the visor grip left bruises on my skin. Sanchez stood there, too shocked to make a move, as the dead man heaved himself off the table and lifted another hand to wrap around my throat. "Sanchez!" I managed to gasp out. "Fucking do something!" His cop instincts finally kicked in, and he grabbed the metal tray, sending medical instruments flying as he raised the plate and bashed the corpse across the head. More of that gray substance sprayed from its ears as the body let go of my throat and staggered off to the left. Its eyes were wide but dull, and I wondered if it could feel pain. It scrabbled against the wall of drawers, struggling to maintain its balance. I reached for the gun by my side, but a loud bang suddenly echoed into the tiny space, and I figured Sanchez had beaten me to the punch. It was a damn good shot. The corpse's head exploded on impact, strewing chunks of gray across the wall and all over my uniform. I clenched my eyes shut and prayed that none of it got in my mouth. When I opened them again, the headless body was jerking on the ground, goo gushing from the inside of its neck. A few seconds later, and the dead body went back to being dead again. "Nice shot, Sanchez," I said. When I looked over at my fellow officer, he was still standing, dumbstruck, clutching the metal tray in his stiff hands. The shot had come from somewhere behind him. Light footsteps clacked on the tiles, and a slender figure stepped out of the darkness, gun still raised and smoking, or maybe that was the eternal cloud of smoke billowing around his thick cigar. "Inspector," I said, massaging my throat, "you've got impeccable timing. Sanchez ran off to get the coroner, for all the good that he could do at this point, while the inspector knelt by the corpse and examined the gooey splatters. I half expected him to stick one of those abnormally thin fingers into the puddle and taste the gunk, but he just stared down at it, in complete defiance of the laws of physics. Tendrils of smoke drifted down from his cigar and hovered above the body, as if to get a closer look.
"I was wondering if this might be your kind of thing," I said. "I mean, before Headless Wonder there tried to kill me, his brain..."
"It's been liquefied,"
the inspector said. He rose from the body, all 7 feet of him, and stared thoughtfully at the wall of drawers.
"Something got into his ear canal and turned his cerebral cortex to mush."
A week ago, I would have called this man insane. But brain-melting ear slugs were far from the weirdest thing I'd seen in the Everglades. "You know anything that could do this?" I asked.
"That's the problem," he said. "This could be any number of entities. You saw with Elroy that human vessels don't endure possession well. In his case, he was sucked dry by the Time Eater. For our poor friend here..."
He gestured towards the grisly puddles.
"Whatever was squatting in his skull was too much for his brain to handle."
"Is it gone?" I asked. "Did you kill it?" We both eyed the corpse warily, as if it could get up again at any second. I imagined the stump of its neck gushing all over the place as it heaved itself off the ground and tried to pick up where it left off, but the body remained slumped, cold and pale. Any drag of life drained and gone.
"This one won't bother us anymore,"
the inspector said at last.
"But these are almost never isolated incidents. If there's some kind of hive out there infesting people's brains, we need to track down the source and destroy it. So keep your ear to the ground. I'll scour the town and see what I can find."
Just then, Sanchez returned with the coroner, who saw the mess and promptly lost his lunch. I helped the man get to a trash can before he could empty the contents of his stomach onto the already goo-stained floor. When I looked up again, the inspector was gone. There was only a little wisp of smoke hanging in the air, where his cigar had been. I was in the process of searching the death records in our database for similar cases, when my cell phone buzzed on my desk. I grabbed it before it could vibrate too long and stared down at my screen. Olivia Marconi was calling. "Shit," I mumbled. I leaned back in my chair and answered the call and braced myself. The first words out of her mouth, "Do we need to have a talk, Hannigan?" "About what?" I asked. I minimized the file I was reading. "Sanchez has been blubbering to me all morning about The Walking Dead, which ordinarily I wouldn't give two shits about, but he says a corpse woke up in the morgue and tried to strangle you. You want to verify that account with me?" "Come on, Marconi, you know Sanchez. Have you ever heard of that guy being a reliable witness?" "Answer the question, Hannigan." Marconi's voice grew low, and for the first time I thought I heard a trace of concern. "You have a habit of getting involved with some weird shit. No offense. I'm not saying the dead are rising, but if something strange happened in that morgue, I want to know." A pause, and then, "Is this another inspector thing?" "Oh?" I asked, too casually. "Don't pull that shit with me," she said, back to being on business. "You know exactly who I'm talking about, the federal agent who showed up on that picket case." "Oh, yeah, him." I brought up the file I'd been reading and rocked back slightly in my chair. "He may have shown up." "Jesus, Mark." Marconi was practically shouting. "You couldn't have opened with that?" "I didn't want to bother you if it turns out to be nothing," I said. "Okay, sure, we had a dead body that wasn't quite as dead as we thought, but this isn't another Skokomish Bluff situation. The inspector and I can handle this one." "Like hell you can!" Marconi was silent for 10 solid seconds. And then, "As soon as you learn anything, you call me. Understand? You boys aren't walking into another situation like last time without my backup." She hung up without saying goodbye. Not that I expected her to. It was late in the afternoon when my cell phone buzzed again. "Inspector," I said, bringing the phone to my ear, "tell me you've got good news."
"I've got a lead, at least," he replied. "Jackson's last known location was the Mountain Ridge Country Club. He and several other men gathered there late last night to watch the Seahawks game. Apparently, Jackson made it back home before morning, but none of the rest did. I've checked with all their families, and we've got 10 missing people on our hands."
"You think their brains turned to mush, too?" I asked.
I think we should check the country club at any rate,
the inspector replied.
I'm on my way there as we speak.
Likewise, I said, grabbing my jacket. I'll be there in 10. I'd never been to the country club before, but I had a rough idea of where it was located. It was one of those fixtures I always drove past during my patrols in the outreaches of the glade. As I wound my way through the streets of town, orange sunlight glared off my windshield and turned the forest backdrop to a silhouette. The inspector, too, was barely more than a shadow when I met him in the club's parking lot, only the speck of his cigar glow in the darkness.
You feel it, don't you?
He said by way of greeting.
There's something wrong here.
I looked up at the squat, one-story building. It was unassuming enough, a yellow structure with a chipped paint job, front porch and a pair of bronze rifles hanging above the door, but I knew what the inspector meant. It was too quiet here. The blinds were down and I couldn't hear a single sound, not even a bird chirping in the eaves. Felt like the two of us had stepped into a circle where nothing moved, nothing breathed. My hand drifted towards the pistol at my waist and hovered there. Well, no point in waiting around, I said. Let's case the joint. The lights were off when we entered the country club, and only the barest of dying sunlight poked through the slats in the window blinds. I tried the light switch and only met with a dull popping sound. There was power somewhere in the building, though. I could hear the staticky voice of a radio host from the other room. It sounded like your standard sports broadcast. The inspector lifted a thin finger to his lips and I nodded. We crept through the darkness towards the sound of the radio. The floorboards creaked under our shoes, so any element of surprise we'd started with was gone. I could only hope the worst thing we'd find was a bunch of guys gathering around a handheld radio, waiting to hear who'd scored the last run. Dozens of animal heads sprouted from the walls, and in the dark, they all had an uncanny look of liveliness about them. They might have been sticking their necks through narrow windows. The wall space between the animal busts was filled with countless photographs and certificates, none of which I could make out clearly. There was a pile of construction materials strewn about the floor near us. I nearly tripped over a stack of planks as I followed the inspector towards the soft drone of the radio. The subsequent clatter was louder than I would have hoped. Seconds later, I heard another creak of the floorboards, this time from across the room. I grabbed the inspector's shoulder and forced him to stop. He grew quiet, listening, waiting for the sound to come again. Nothing but the radio. I began to wonder if it was just the building shifting, old as it was. Then something moved in the shadows. And suddenly a figure in spattered overalls was rushing at us, eyes vacant. My hand shot to the gun on my hip, but the inspector was faster. He grabbed a shovel from the construction heap and swung it at the man's chest. It collided like a dusty sack of bricks. The man kept coming. Arms extended as the inspector wound back for another strike. This time he aimed for the forehead. The entire head detached from the body and rolled into the corner, joining the collection of hunting trophies hanging from the wall. Shit, I said, pistol in hand. Whatever got to Jackson got him too. Another man leapt from the rafters, this one wearing a plaid shirt and grime-encrusted cargo pants. He fell on top of the inspector, who nearly knocked him to the ground. The two of them grappled for a few seconds before the inspector swung the body around and into the wooden planks. At first, I couldn't tell if the inspector was just strong or if the man's head really was that brittle. It popped on impact like a water balloon, spewing gray gunk across the wall. Mark, behind you! The inspector shouted. I whipped around and fired three shots at the approaching figure. The first two went wild, but the third clipped him in the temple, sending a spray of hair and brain particles flying. The body continued to stagger toward me, so I placed another shot right between the eyes. This time, the body fell forward and slumped onto the floor. Its head disintegrated. More were coming now, emerging from the darkness where they'd been crouching. They moved quickly but clumsily, like toddlers learning how to walk for the first time. I picked them off from a distance. Headshot after headshot they went down, their next stumps bleeding gray goo onto the wood. Soon there was a pile of headless bodies lying strewn across the floor. I waited for more to come, breathing heavily, but it seemed we'd gotten the last of them. The inspector stood in the corner, brushing the sticky substance off his hands. "Did we just slaughter the entire country club?" I asked him. My pulse was racing a little too fast for comfort, and I seemed unable to lower my gun.
"Those things we just killed, they weren't men,"
the inspector said.
"Not anymore. Whatever parasite wriggled into their brains made sure of that."
He stopped wiping his hands and looked at me.
"You're not a murderer, Mark. You were just cleaning up an infestation."
I knew he was right.
But still, I'd blown the heads off of a dozen men today, and it was going to take some time to get that image out of my head. I looked away from the stack of bodies and turned towards the other room. The door was hanging wide open, and the sportscaster droned on behind it, oblivious to the massacre that had just taken place. "There may be more of them back there," I said, lowering my voice. I clutched my gun and nodded towards the open door. The inspector said nothing in reply, but he glided past me to peer into the shadowed space. I noticed for the first time that his footsteps were silent. He could have been hovering a few inches in the air, for all I knew.
"I don't hear any movement. You keep your weapon drawn, just in case."
He slipped inside, and I followed him, letting my eyes adjust to the darkness. The windows on the far side of the room were boarded shut, so even less light could get through here. I could tell at least that an open bar stretched across one of the walls, and there was a pool table in the corner, a single cue stick leaning up against it. There were plenty of round tables strewn throughout the room, although most of the chairs were lying on their sides. It looked like there had been some sort of scuffle. The place was deserted now, though, near as I could tell. The radio we heard since we walked in was sitting on the closest table. It was an old thing, probably manufactured in the 90s, judging by the pair of cassette tapes. The antenna poked up at a haphazard angle. I listened vaguely at the announcer as he went on about who was at bat and which teams were expected in the playoffs this year. Part of me wondered why this device was still running, and everything else in this place seemed to be so dead. I think we got them all, I said, holstering my gun. That must have...
Hush.
The inspector lifted a hand and pointed at the radio. The sound grew louder at once, although the static was worse than before. It sounded like the scrabbling of 1,000 rats across pavement. In the midst of the noise, I heard what the announcer was actually saying. And the flesh crawled on my neck.
"The Angels have given up 3 runs trying to get home again, but do not worry, listeners. There will always be a place in hell for our feathered friends."
It was a man, or at least, it sounded like a man. He had the same drawl as those old-timey announcers that you'd always hear in vintage movies.
"In other news, Santiago is off the pitcher's mound with a broken wrist, and Williams is a dirty fucking cunt who will be the first to die when the cleansing comes."
"What the hell?" I muttered. The voice cut out, replaced by an ululating sound that reminded me of a garbled war cry. It was so loud I could actually see the speakers trembling. Then it died as quickly as it had arisen, replaced by a gentle hum and the sound of women laughing in the background. A new voice, clearly female.
"You've been listening to Sports. Stay tuned for your daily horoscope."
"Inspector?" I tried to say, but he gestured for me to shut up. A third voice had joined the chorus, this one a low, sultry baritone, like a man trying to talk up some pretty young thing in the back room of a bar. A theremin played lazily in the background.
"I want you to imagine a man, listeners." The voice on the radio purred. "A man who loves you so much. A man who loves you so very much, a man who wants nothing more than to enfold you in his scaly wings and squeeze you with the force of his love. I want you to breathe in his scent until you have no reason to breathe at all. I want you to crane your neck until it breaks and howl at the blood-red moon. Can you do that for me, listeners? Can you howl at the moon with me?"
Then the radio erupted in a screech that couldn't possibly have come from a human throat. I could feel my eardrums throbbing, and I clapped my hands over them to block out the awful sound. "It's the radio!" I shouted to the inspector, my voice muffled. "That's what's melting people's brains!" The inspector wasted no time darting over to the fallen chairs and picking up the radio. He turned the machine off, but that inhuman screech still issued from the speakers, so he tore the thing in half with his bare hands and flung both pieces against the wall. I lowered my hands numb as the inner mess of machinery sparked a few times and then went dark. The nightmare shriek faded out, but the disease sort of blip. "Someone's been eating their Wheaties," I commented, but the inspector wasn't listening to me. He leaned down and picked through the wares, frowning. The smoke billowing from his cigar had taken on a peculiar shade of orange.
"It's in the radio waves," he said at last. "Not much is obvious, but where's the source?"
"Unless it's a private broadcast, it's got to be down at the community's radio tower," I said. "Pacific Glade isn't that big. If you get your news via radio, it's not like you got many options."
"Then we need to go there as soon as possible and stop this broadcast, or We could be dealing with a whole town of brainless corpses before long.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me twice.
Hey there, kids, it's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and once again, it's the end of tonight's video, so I want to tell you all thank you for listening or watching, however you hear my voice. Whether it be on YouTube or on the podcast, thank you so much for being here with me. There's going to be a new story every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday night right here on YouTube, or if you're not watching on YouTube, that means the podcast gets updated on SoundCloud, Apple, Google Play, and now the podcast is on Spotify, so if it's easier for you guys to listen there than it is to listen on YouTube, then hey, not such a bad deal, right? As always, any support you guys give towards Mr. Creepypasta's story time really does help me out. I can actually keep the lights on in the house, and I can get nice little cat treats for Hercules. Okay, sorry for taking up so much of your time. Thank you guys for listening once again, and sweet dreams.